trembling mortals. I am your god, the great and powerful Cthulhu. Joined by a man who is complexion impaired, I give you the comic book guy.
Worst costume ever.
Welcome to a horrific edition of ARG Presents. Prepare to lose sanity in this week's episode. As we spun the wheel, we make the deal, and this week we'll be playing games on the horrific, hated, vile Xbox, the original OG, Brent. What do you think about that?
The episode was not well received. We're here to redeem the Xbox. I think it deserves a little more love than it gets.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Brent, the original Xbox, we looked at this thing a while back, and we're not going to go over the particulars again, but just a little bit of Xbox knowledge. We both had one of these back in the day, Brentster.
Absolutely.
And we were just talking before air, we both liked these things, didn't we?
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with my Xbox.
Now, how much of the fun and joy of your Xbox did the piracy element cause?
That was later in its lifespan.
Yeah.
When the 360 had already made its appearance, it opened me up to a lot more variety of games than I would have played otherwise. But, I mean, I owned the Xbox was a game outside of the PC, of course, that I owned the most games for. I had, like, 16 games for the Xbox.
I own a ton of games for it as well, actually. And for one thing, you could get them pretty cheap there towards the end. I like this machine. It came out way back in 2001 and was a, let's call it a fairly moderate success. I recall that as most consoles of the day were, Microsoft was taking a loss on every console, and so was a lot of other developers. Nintendo were taking a loss, for example, on their GameCube. But I think, as I recall, the GameCube was a $20 loss per unit, and the Xbox was a $100 loss per unit.
Yeah,
they were taking a bath on these things.
Far bigger loss.
You know, they were going to make their money back in software, and I don't think they even came close to doing that. But
here's the thing. They're Microsoft, so money means nothing.
That's true. That's a good point. But still, it is what it is. This machine, though, had a lot of good games for it. Just right off the top of my head, and we've covered a couple of these. I really liked Test Drive Evil Destruction on this. We played that quite a bit. I liked the James Bond game on here. I thought it was good. I actually liked several of the sports titles on here. I thought they were outstanding. The Maddens were on here, all that stuff. The console itself is not an attractive console, but it's not hideous. It's just a box. But this was your really the in America anyway. This was your first PC in a box, wasn't it, Brent?
It was certainly a PC in a box.
Yeah.
That's not a bad thing. Also, Microsoft knew what they were doing with online stuff. Now, they didn't have it all together in the Xbox era, but they got there. And I have a feeling that was greatly due to their life in the PC world. So,
yeah.
And a lot of companies followed suit after that. So, Nintendo will catch up at some point, but, you know.
Yeah.
God bless their little souls. They're trying.
That is one thing that the Xbox, it wasn't the first console to have network capabilities, but it was easily by far the first one that did it right.
Most confident,
With Xbox Live, which is still around, of course, and, you know, for the newer consoles. But it's a great network, and it really, that sort of made the console. The highest selling game on the console was Halo 2, which I believe took advantage of Xbox Live, so that would make sense. So at least that Microsoft did have a hit with that. But, you know, they had the Halos were very popular. They sort of ran the show on that thing. But overall, the original Xbox didn't fare all that well with PlayStation's more popular offerings out there, plus the stuff for Nintendo. But all that said, a lot of good games, some good Star Wars games, a lot of good Xbox Live games that you can play. Brent, you had a couple pretty good action role-playing games. Just, I believe Fable was one, and there was a, what was the martial arts fashion one that you had that was, I thought was kind of a neat game. Do you remember that one?
I do. I know exactly what you're talking about. I don't know why I can't remember the title, the name of it right now.
Yeah.
The Xbox's big flaw, if you can call it that, was it could not nail down a ton of exclusives. It was early in its life. I mean, it had its Halos and a couple of Microsoft exclusive offerings. But outside of that, they really didn't have any huge runaway hits that made you want to buy an Xbox, outside of course, Halo being the obvious exception. My thing with the Xbox, though, was outside of the first run of controllers, which the Fat Boy controllers, no good.
The Duke.
No good. But the refined S controllers, which was originally the Japanese controllers, the smaller ones, amongst my favorite controllers. Now, again, they refined it to what I consider control pad perfection in the Xbox 360. But this really started paving the way for the Microsoft style controller, which everyone I know who plays PC games and uses a controller uses a Xbox controller. So there you
go. Including me. It is. In some ways, it became the de facto PC controller. I like the Duke, which was the big old Xbox controller, but it was so huge and heavy, it makes one wonder how it got made.
It's the
exact opposite of what they would use in Japan, where they always go for those incredibly slight. But by the way, we should mention this was Microsoft's foray into that market in Japan, and it took a double super bath over there. It got murdered, didn't it, Brent?
It did. Yeah. I mean, for a Japanese system, it didn't offer a lot of what the Japanese market was looking for. And that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah. It didn't do well there. Really, none of the Microsoft machines have done well there, so c'est la vie. All that said, Brentster, we were tasked with taking a look at a couple games, seasonal games, hopefully, since this is the holiday season. And I think we chose, some diverse games in that, around those elements, frankly. I, all-powerful Cthulhu, will first go as I have that option, being a god and all. And I'm going to talk about my game, and that is, bam, Call Cthulhu, Dark Corners of the Earth. Scary stuff. So, this is a game that was developed by Head First Productions, published by Bethesda, and debuted way back in October 24th, 2005. Really creepily, almost 15 years ago today on the dot. And this came out for Windows and the Xbox. The Xbox version was the first version released. Before we even go down that road, let's talk about what is Cthulhu and the Cthulhu mythos are, because it's important to know what your game is about, because this game, if you're not in the know, it can be confusing. The Cthulhu mythos sprang from the fertile imagination of H.P. Lovecraft. H.P. Lovecraft lived from 1890 to 1937, and was a prolific writer. He was a man who wrote a ton of real creepy books and short stories. He's most well known for the Call of Cthulhu. He also did Shadows Over Innsmouth, from which a lot of this game is derived. He also did a book called The Shadow Out of Time, which is a little bit of that in this. A very cool book called At the Mountains of Madness. A bunch of other stuff. He came up, among other things, he came up with a Necronomicon. The mad Arab Abdul Alcazar penned this in a fever dream, as I recall. But H.P. Lovecraft was this sort of a hermit-style writer from that era, turn of the century. That one of the things he was known for was his prolific letter writing, which I always thought was that this guy has correspondence to beat the band. Like, they've got all kinds of letters. He was a literary, he ran a lot of, like, literary organizations and whatnot. He was also known as being sort of a shy dude, and he wasn't a guy that did a lot of public works. He was married briefly. I believe it was either his mother or his wife. Someone in close to him actually did some time in the asylum. A lot of his books and works are centered around madness and man's inability to cope with the unknown, things that their minds couldn't grasp will drive them mad and insane, which I love that stuff. I personally discovered Lovecraft back in middle school, and I've been a fan ever since. And he wasn't mega popular in his day, but the stars have risen for him over the years, and he's gotten more popular. So when you've got a guy writing that kind of work, it appeals to teenagers and whatnot, you've got to have a game, right? And so a game was sprung forth. So what is this game? Well, it's quite an interesting game. You start out as a detective, or actually at the beginning of this, you're a cop, and you are tasked with going in. Someone has called for you to come help investigate a freak out at this mansion where a bunch of cultists have barricaded themselves in, and a bunch of stuff's going crazy, and they've asked for you by name, and you've got no idea why you're even going there, but you roll up. And so sort of the early part of this game is your exploration of this mansion where all these cultists are at. And from there on, you go deep into the world of Cthulhu. This game is kind of hard to pin down in terms of the gameplay style. At the beginning of this, like I said, it's got a cinematic sort of appearance at first. And as you go through the cultists, you'll notice that there is no heads-up display in this at all. So anytime you are playing this, you have no way of knowing how hurt you are. You have no way of knowing how much ammo you've got. You've got no way of knowing how sane you are, and in terms of visually. All the clues you will receive are either through your guy's cries and screams and pants and how tired he sounds. Plus, occasionally, if you're seeing something that mortals weren't meant to see, the screen will give you these bizarre visual effects, contorting and spinning and really causing problems for especially when you're trying to aim or walk down a hall or whatnot. It's pretty neat, and also you'll get some crazy, audible cues and stuff that will tell you that you're going nuts or that you're hurt real bad. It's a neat system. I found it very immersive. The game has a very dark tone. In fact, too dark, I think, for a modern TV. When I tried playing this for the first time this week, it was so dark on my LCD that I couldn't see anything. I had to turn the brightness off.
You have to turn it up. You have to turn the gamma.
You had the same issue on that.
Well, I run my TV kind of bright anyway, so it wasn't so bad. But I still had to flick it up a few notches.
Yeah, no kidding, eh? So as you delve deeper into the mystery of this game, you are tasked with visiting a Massachusetts port town called Innsmouth. All right. Again, this whole area was based on The Shadow of Innsmouth, which is a very good read from the Lovecraft Library, if you're so inclined to check that out. And you ride in on a bus to this little town. It's a town out in the middle of nowhere. And as you go through this town, you'll notice that the inhabitants of this town are all almost like, they're almost frog-like in a way. They talk like they're gargling. They're green. Everyone there doesn't like you. Even the bus driver doesn't like you. They don't like strangers in their town. And what you begin to do is unravel this incredible mystery as you go through. Probably the first two-fifths of the game are you walking around with no weapons of any sort. You are literally defenseless, and all you have is your wits and your speed. Your ability to try to figure out what's happening to keep you in the game. The opening two-fifths of the game, or maybe almost three-fifths of the game, you have you in this sort of investigative role. So what you're doing is you're just walking through that creepy town of Innsmouth, talking to the people that'll talk to you, and exploring and trying to get into places and experiencing weird stuff. Now, I should mention that the person you play also has, after his encounter with those cultists, has sanity problems of his own. So occasionally he'll have a flashback or something, and it's usually very creepy when it happens. Brent, I don't know if you ever played this before this week. What were your initial thoughts when you loaded this up?
Well, I have played this. I've actually played through the entire game
really?
Back when it was released.
No kidding. I didn't know that.
And I have a love-hate relationship with this game. I think the beginning levels where you're doing the investigation are good. I think when you first get to the town and you're learning about it and you're sneaking around and you're investigating, I think that section is great. I think once you start getting weapons and it sort of becomes a shooter, I think it falls apart. Part of the fun for this for me is the fear that you can't do anything. You're defenseless. You've got to run and hide from these things. And you're sneaking around. You're doing cop work. Once it becomes a shooter, and I know it has to do something for the climax of the game, and it holds out weaponry for a lot longer than you'd probably think it would. But I think that once you lose that defenseless feeling, it's an injustice to the game. Now, of course, when you are handed weaponry, you're also handed a lot more freaky things that you have to deal with. But I wish they would have just not had... I mean, even just giving your guy a gun, I think is too much. But it goes over the top, and you start getting more mystic-type weapons that are really destructive. I wasn't a huge fan of that, but I respect it. The only thing that you really, to get into this game, you really have to know going in is this is not, it's not an action game. This is, and it's really, it's a horror game, but not like Resident Evil style horror. It's more of it's almost closer to a point and click game. Even though it's not point and click, it's first-person perspective, in that you are going around and you are trying to solve what's going on. And I appreciate that in the game. How far did you get into this, Aaron?
It's funny you should mention that, because if you'd asked me about this game a week ago, I would have not exactly agreed with you, because I had played... In fact, I had a save game on here right about the point where you would get out of Innsmouth the first time, you know. And I played more, and I'm going to agree with you, to be honest with you. The game changes its tone probably three, almost halfway through, maybe a little more, maybe a little less than halfway, because I did not beat it, but I got a lot further than I had before. This game is it's an unusual, tricky game to talk about, because it almost lulls you to sleep in some ways. And then, like, I'll give you an example, and we both know about this because it's sort of a famous scene. There's a scene where the people in Innsmouth have had enough of you, and you're in your hotel room, and they're coming to kill you. And up to this point, you've just sort of wandered around. You know, you haven't done anything that... And in this part, it's a timed area where you've got to do all kinds of crazy stuff to escape. And it is tough, isn't it, Brent? And you're especially yes. Since you're not prepared for it. It's one of the toughest parts of the game that I've found running through this thing. And it's actually an awesome scene. I mean, really, if you watch it, it's like a movie. But it's tough to play, and you'll die lots trying to figure it out. Luckily, this thing's got a pretty robust save system. Whenever you see a... Elder sign on the floor or wall, that's a save point you can go to. It's a pretty good scene. These things are sprinkled around pretty liberally.
Yeah, the game never really tries to punish you for failing. Usually, before any type of challenging part, it lets you save, so you're never that deep into it.
That's right.
And that's appreciated, because you don't want to... especially for people who just want to experience the story, there are scenes like the fleeing scene that are far more difficult than the parts before and after it. That can be very frustrating for people who are just trying to get through the story.
Yeah.
But it also, you know, it makes you have to learn about the platforming, which is stiff. The platforming in this game is stiff.
I mean, it's not bad. It's fair.
It's stiff.
You have to learn how you're gonna play it. The funny thing about this game really is, like you mentioned it, and I agree with you now more than I would have. It's almost like the first part of this game is outstanding. It's oppressive as you walk around. It's weird to be in a town where everything is dark, everything is foggy and crummy, and everyone hates you, and it's creepy, and you have no weapons. That is real frightening. That gave me the feeling that I was reading one of these books, because that's sort of what real life would be like in a town like this. If you're walking around, you know, that would be super duper creepy. And this guy just came to town to investigate a missing person. He wasn't here to investigate any weird humanoid fish creatures or deep old ones or anything like that. So, you know, and plus this guy's got his own mental problems, which make that part interesting. Then you move on. And as far as I got, Brent, was you ended up working for J. Edgar Hoover. You go into this, there's a scene where you're going into this warehouse. And that I found very difficult, Brent. And I never got through that. And I know I watched further on, but there are scenes. I mean, eventually, they are going to bombard the whole town at one point.
Yeah.
I mean, it really takes many turns. That I didn't see coming. I haven't watched the end of it yet, because I'd like to actually beat the game. But after you finished it up, what were your thoughts? I mean, as a whole.
I was pleased. I did not read all of the lore back then or now.
Yeah, tons.
And there is tons. There, I mean, if you want to sit down and read every piece of paper and scrap and notebook entry, I mean, there's a novel there in and of itself.
Yeah.
So I probably didn't get as much out of it as I could have. But what I got out of it, I enjoyed it. I think the game is actually a pretty good length. I think from beginning to end, if you had some idea of what you're doing, you're looking at about 8 to 10 hours, which I think is fair for a game like this.
Yeah.
I think the ending credit scene, which I'm not going to spoil, is top notch.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. You know, one thing we should mention is that as you go through this and you're playing Jack Walters, I think's his name. As you go through this, anything you see on the ground or on a bookcase, wherever, you can click on it and he'll comment. It's all actual spoken dialogue.
Yeah.
And they must have recorded 4 billion hours of dialogue for this game, because he'll talk about pretty much anything. And it's good.
Yeah,
the dialogue's good. The voice acting's okay, but the dialogue is good.
Yeah, I agree.
You know,
the only thing I don't like about the story is they do fall off. They use the trope of the guy has amnesia, and I understand why they did it.
Yeah, that is a distinct element of the story.
Yeah,
in this case,
it's just not.
Yeah.
Come on, amnesia again.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, it makes sense at the end that he does slowly get his memory back.
Yeah,
as the game goes on.
And that's why it's okay. Is they use it as a crutch, but it's not a huge crutch.
Yeah, this game has an interesting healing element, where you actually have to go huddle down somewhere and heal yourself, and you heal your various different elements of your health are affected. Your leg or your arm, you got to heal them. It's kind of neat. I mean, it's what did you think? That was any great shakes? It was different.
I mean, I've played plenty of games that's done that before.
Right. This was one of the early games that tried something like that. I thought it was pretty cool. So I want to talk about the development of this game, because it's actually pretty interesting. This game was, the development on this thing started like, I don't know, 6 years before the actual game was released. And it went through a bunch of bizarre changes that I didn't know this until I was researching it this week. So, Head First Games actually went to like the news groups and said, "Listen, what?" and got story suggestions from fans, you know, which I think that's kind of cool, to how to make this game. And they were originally going to make this game for the PS2, was right there at the top of the list of the PC. And it was the original planned release was like in late 2001, right? But a bunch of weird changes happened, man. Eventually, they were going to have multiplayer in it. It was going to have, like, this story is pretty linear. They were going to have a non-linear story. It was going to be much larger. And even close to release, this had multiplayer maps with deathmatch style rules.
Which would be stupid.
Which would be horribly stupid. I don't know what they were thinking there.
This was the era when every game had to have that.
Yeah. We should mention that this game's buggy. Even on the Xbox, and the PC version is double secret buggy, my friends. Yeah. The Xbox is probably less buggy. I will say, having played this on both the PC and the Xbox, I find it easier to play this on the PC with a mouse and a keyboard. But the Xbox controls okay. It's not like, I mean, I think it plays a fair game. But even on modern machines, this is ultra buggy. This is available in good old games. It used to be available in Steam, and both versions had problems on a modern PC. Real, like, game-breaking problems. So if you want to play a version of this that you can actually finish and isn't going to screw up, you're probably going to be wanting to play the Xbox version because the other versions had all kinds of weird issues. I should mention, much to my chagrin, that this thing flopped when it was released, unfortunately. And it was a highly touted game. But it didn't do well. In fact, according to Wiki, when this got released in Europe, it only sold 5,000 copies.
Wow.
got good. And overall, it was considered a dud. It did have a sequel that was in the works called Call of Cthulhu Destiny's End. That was going to be a PS2 and Xbox title, which it did not happen. Then another one that was talked about. I remember hearing about both these, Call of Cthulhu Beyond the Mountains of Madness, which would have been awesome. But it got the axe too, so those are non-starters. I looked up some reviews of this thing. GameSpot, which I used to remember. GameSpot, are they still around?
Yep.
I used to go there all the time. 7.9 out of 10, pretty good. GameSpy, I know they're gone. They gave it 3.5 stars. GameZone gave it 7.9 out of 10. IGN gave it 7.8 out of 10, and Team Xbox gave this an 8.1 out of 10. I would say that this game is somewhere in that ballpark. Again, you have to be able to deal with the weird shift about midway through the game. A lot of people speculate that the shifts in how the game plays are due to just bizarre production, like multiple teams working on it, stuff like that. You have to be able to deal with not having a weapon. I think that's ultimately why this thing failed, is because people expected some sort of first-person shooter horror game, you know, and like a Doom or something. And
oh, that's like not Resident Evil.
And that's not what Call of Cthulhu is about, and it shouldn't be, because if you read the books, you're not going to walk up to one of these things and just kind of shoot it with a gun. Like, these are creepy. These are creepy aliens from beyond the moon. They don't worry about the trivialities of man. They come in here to romp and stomp, and when they get woke up, they're ready to kill. I will say that the expanse of this game, you go all the way to the Sunken City. You do a lot of stuff. There's a lot of callbacks to the books and stuff, which I appreciate. And on that level, I would give it a pretty good score from me. And your overall thoughts about the same?
I would say that if this was something, if Call of Cthulhu or horror games in general interest you, this is good enough to give a look. But if that sort of thing does not appeal to you, nah, just move on.
Personally, I would definitely give this one a look. If any, for any reason, just to soak in some of the ambiance, play it, at least get halfway through it, explore the town. There's a lot of cool side stories and stuff in that town that are really, there's one creepy thing about that. Remember the part where that little girl's mom is locked in the attic? Holy crap, they built up the tension right there that is super duper creepy. And I recommend getting through to that part. So yeah, I'll always like this game. Obviously, I am the great and powerful Cthulhu, so I'm going to endorse this game. So, now, we're done with that. It's Halloween, Brent. I knew you picked a winner here. You came, you saw, and what was the Halloween-related game that you picked for us this week?
I picked Hit and Run, Simpsons Hit and Run.
And
let me tell you something. This has, although I'm sure you did not see it, a super great Treehouse of Horror level at the end of the game.
Oh, here we go. I knew that was your cop out.
That is absolutely in spirit with the season. But let's talk about the rest of Hit and Run, which is just as good. Good from pretty much beginning to end. I don't want to tip my hand on how I feel about it. This game was released in 2003, the end of 2003. Came out on GameCube, PlayStation, Xbox, and for Windows. I did not know this had a Windows release until this very moment.
Oh, yeah.
developed by Radical Entertainment and published by Universal Games. Thank you. And this was a pseudo follow-up to their previous game, which was Road Rage. Now, this was not an official sequel because they didn't want to do that, but it was sort of an unofficial sequel. But we'll get into that a little bit later. So what is Simpsons Hit and Run? This is a GTA-style game where you are on foot if you want to be, but most of your time you are in your car, various cars, doing missions such as getting to somewhere in a certain amount of time or picking up items along the way, destroying other vehicles, racing other vehicles. Pretty much, if there is a type of vehicle mission you can think of, this game has it. And you play as all the different members of the Simpson family, Marge, Homer, Bart, Lisa, as well as an Apu section. I guess that was since Maggie couldn't drive a car. They threw him in instead. The plot of this game is kind of all over the place. But the main plot is these strange bee creatures with cameras in their face have been released on Springfield. And it's up to you to figure out what is going on and who's doing it and why they're doing it. As the game progresses, though, there are tons of little side missions and side stories that you can find and explore. And an absolute ton of collectibles in the form of cards and coins that you can use to buy various outfits and upgrades. And even a four-player mini game, which is sort of awesome if you've ever played it. It's a sprint-style mini game where you race around a one-screen track. Sort of like a RC Pro-Am type affair. Good fun. Obviously not the meat of the game, though. It was obviously tacked on to say that the game was four-player. The driving in this game, which you would be doing the majority of the time, is phenomenal. There are dozens upon dozens of cars, and each of them have their own sort of feel and weight and floatiness, but they all feel good. It's a joy to get into one car and get out of, you know, something completely different. And you get that feeling pretty much for every vehicle. And there are some very classic vehicles, like the Mr. Plow truck for Homer. And there's all kinds of in-show gags and whatnot that you will see across your journey. Occasionally, to kind of mix it up, there are platforming sections. And the platforming for this game is not great. It's kind of hard to control. But luckily, for the main mission parts, there aren't a whole lot of times that you have to do the platforming sections. Now, for the side quest, you do a lot more of it, but if you don't like it, you don't have to do it for the most part. Tons of Simpson humor. It was written by the creators of The Simpsons. They and their fingerprints are all over it. all the different gags that you hear. Everything is voice lined by the correct people. And everyone that you would think of from the show is in the game. It's remarkable how many characters they shove in, either as main focal points, as side missions, or in the background as you are moving along. Just about everyone you can possibly think of is here. I had a blast with this game, and I was kind of concerned if my rose-tinted goggles had kind of blurred my vision to a lot of the problems in the game. And no. I could sit down and play this game from beginning to end right now and have a great time. The overall game's probably, you know, if you don't really hit a lot of side missions and you just try to get to the story, you're looking at about 6 hours. And if you do all the side stuff, you're probably looking at about 10 to 12, which is probably a little long. By that point, you'll probably be done. And that's okay, because the game is absolutely perfect in short bursts. You can get in there, get a few missions done, save it, come back the next day, and have fun with it again and again, and really stretch out your playing enjoyment. Aaron, what was your experience with this game?
Well, I had played this one back in the day. Of course, I played Road Rage as well. And Road Rage was basically The Simpsons ripping off Crazy Taxi.
Well, we're going to get into that.
And
right now,
this game
let's have
is,
this game.
This game is The
you.
Simpsons ripping off GTA.
No, it's not.
It's yeah, because they still kept a little Crazy Taxi in there, too. There's just a little bit of both. So one of the big things when this was released was the ability to tour Springfield. That sounds stupid now, but when this came out, the thought that you could drive around and walk around a virtual Springfield was pretty appealing if you're a fan of the show, because I remember having this this CD package. It was interactive CD package where you could walk around Springfield. That's all it was. It wasn't even a game. You know,
well,
and
I mean, there were game elements. I know
right,
what you're talking about.
But not like
but
this. And
no,
so, but this
like
was like that on steroids. Listen, the game is fair. It's entertaining. It's got all the Simpsons humor of that era, which is good. That's before it jumped the shark multiple times. It is trippy and creepy to see everything in Springfield rendered in a 3D way. And that doesn't do the characters any favors sometimes, but I mean, overall, the graphics are as good as they're going to be, given the fact that they're taking 2D cartoon characters and making them 3D. The driving is fun. The controls are fine. In fact, I can control this a lot better than I can Crazy Taxi. The layout of Springfield is pretty good to drive around. There's tons of secrets, collectibles, like you said. There's tons and tons and tons and tons of callbacks to the show that only a fan or a super fan would get, you know. And I mean, they range from like stuff that most people would get to like real obscure stuff, and stuff that only appeared one time in the show or for even for one segment. Dialogue's pretty. I mean, let's face facts. The missions are goofy, and the dialogue is wacky. It's what you would expect from a Simpsons game. If you liked this sort of game. The idea that you could go into all these different buildings and stuff, like I said, there was a lot of appeal to that back in the day, because it was something people were like into. What would it be like to walk around Springfield, to go into the Quickie Mart, to do all this stuff? Again, it sounds sort of hokey now, but it was true. I think the way it's set up, it's approachable. The plot with the bees, because at the beginning you've got these weird bees with the antennas, then they fly through a bunch of radioactive waste that's coming up out of the smokestack. And I never played this long enough to get the full plot. I didn't beat it, that's for sure. It's fun. It'll hold your attention for a while. It's one of those games where you can come in and play it and not play it for a week or a month and then come back and play some more. It's not like you need to remember where you were at. I liked it. It aged pretty well, to be honest with you. I guess that's due to the fact that the subject matter is Springfield and The Simpsons, and they really haven't changed that much. So it really looks pretty good. And I don't think even on a modern machine, if you tried to render this game like with high res, where I don't actually think it does it any favors. I think this is sort of exactly the right, graphically, this is probably exactly where you want to be, because the last thing you want is a super crisp 3D Simpsons game. It just that would work. You need something like this. So I did enjoy that. I will say a couple times I laughed at some of the wacky stuff they said. They also, the Simpsons knew, they know this is a game, so there's a lot of game-related humor in there. And I mean, right out of the gate, they say, like, they talk about boring tutorial levels, and then they send you on one.
Yeah.
So, which I thought was pretty funny. Everyone, like you said, everyone that you would expect to be there is, voice-wise. You even when you drive around town, you just see characters that you would have seen from the show. Tons of them, even obscure ones. They're just out walking around like they're having a life, you know. This was I remember when this came out, this was sort of a big deal, I think it's still a really good game. I've actually played this mostly on the Xbox, and I think this is probably, I played a little bit of this in the GameCube. I haven't played on anything else. I think, I think they got the sweet spot on this. You could also get different cars, like you mentioned. There's a ton of cars, actually. Like Krusty's got one, and a Pooh, and the Canyonero.
Oh, there's tons.
I think both the snow plows are in here. There's also, you can change the way your guy looks. You can use money there. You collect coins and stuff in this, so you can use them to get stuff. Pretty cool. I enjoyed it. It's not a game that I would want to play like every day for 10 hours, but it's one you can definitely play up and go back to.
This is, for me, this was the glory days of The Simpsons. This was, your season 3 to season 8 type of affair, where for at least me, The Simpsons was a daily joy watching just as much as I could. I had a VCR that had The Simpsons on it that would play pretty much nonstop. The series itself was a huge influence on my life. A lot of the humor and throwbacks and quotes I still do today. It's unfortunate what The Simpsons became in the later years, but that's not what this game is focused on. This game is focused on the best of the best, and it really comes through in the game and the writing and the fun. That's another thing. Even if you aren't a Simpsons fan, even if you don't know who the Simpsons are, you can play this game and still have fun, because the driving controls are really tight. They're really good.
And the directional stuff's good, too. Like, it's way, way better than, like, a Crazy Taxi, for example.
Well, let's go ahead and get into that. The first game that was released with the Simpsons in this kind of vein was Hit and Run, or Road Rage. And that was a Crazy Taxi clone. So much so that they got sued for it. And they wanted to go a different direction than that, but still be able to build off of work they've already done. And that's exactly what they did. Most of Hit and Run is played in your vehicle. And the driving mechanics that they learned from Hit and Run has been refined to a golden shimmer and left for you to play in Hit and Run. So much so that I'm telling you, even if you are not a Simpsons fan, I would recommend playing this game, because it feels good and it's fun. And it doesn't take itself seriously. It doesn't make itself so hard that you're trying things again and again and again. I bet you can get through half the game and never fail a mission. And towards the end of the game, it does get more difficult. But never, like, punishingly so, in my opinion.
You know, I look at The Simpsons a lot like I look at the Star Wars franchise. It's a beloved franchise that I loved, that they've made me learn to slowly hate over the period of decades. And I still like The Simpsons, but I don't have the love for it that I did when I was younger, which is because they've ruined it so many times. Never has a show been prostituted out like The Simpsons has. They won't let it die. It still shambles on. This they got 15 good years out of a show that's been on for 30 or whatever. It's been on forever. I believe it came on in 89.
I think so 15 is being incredibly generous.
21 years. Well, listen, I know. I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt. There was you can find decent episodes up to that around in that time period. But my point is, when this game came out, it was probably at the peak of its awesomeness.
I agree.
And so, but I mean, don't fool yourselves. This is they've still liberally borrowed from Crazy Taxi, and then they just liberally borrowed from GTA. But it works. It works. That's what makes it fun. So I'm going to give them a pass on that. Plus, they put some effort forward. And by the way, Simpsons Road Rage wasn't bad either, to be honest with you.
It wasn't bad.
I mean, Crazy Taxi was a fun game. And people real forget that that game is pretty – that game's been around for a long time. And so revising it was not difficult. They just made it less goofy and or they made it more goofy, really. But they made it less difficult to follow the arrows and put the Simpsons in there. And there you go. So it's not like it's a – But it was rocket science. But I thought they did a pretty good job on this. Now, all
and
that
considering,
said...
Considering other Simpson games, this is the cream of the crop. I mean,
yeah.
When
because
you look
the
at
Simpsons
some of the NES
a real
games
duds.
And stuff, the Simpsons got whored out to a lot of licenses.
Yeah.
A lot of mediocre games.
Simpsons
this
Wrestling, Simpsons Bowling are two of the... In fact, Simpsons Wrestling is one of the all-time worst games. Horrible.
Yeah.
And I love wrestling and The Simpsons. Horrible. They dropped the ball big time on that one. So, yeah, this is probably the last. Of course, if you like the Bart versus series, that stuff, which I didn't like.
No one's like, man, that's real Simpson humor for me.
Yeah.
This is actual Simpsons fun in a Simpsons universe with excellent gameplay and some mediocre platforming.
You know, I see a trend here, comic book Brent. Because the first time we covered the Xbox, you did your game was Futurama.
That's right.
If you'll recall. So here we are back again with another one of your beloved animated titles. I guess this is a sweet spot for those animated show come game outputs. But
if
I think this one, this is probably
a
lot. What's that?
A third Xbox game.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and tell you right now, I'm playing the Batman animated series game. So let's go ahead and fire it up.
Yeah, that's also a good one. I like this one more than Futurama, and I love Futurama, but don't get me wrong, but I mean, I think this is a more fun game, just because it's more accessible. Futurama is really hard. This game here, not so bad. So, there you go. Your Halloween offerings. And Brent, by the way, I'm not going to let you get out of this segment without belittling you and berating you for being an idiot, for picking a Simpsons game for our Halloween spectacular. You're a fool. And this has nothing to do with Halloween, and there's no way you're going to convince me otherwise.
Untrue. The last part of this game, when the undead take over the town, is probably scarier than any Cthulhu offering.
Take off. Weak is what I'm saying to you. We'll be smiting you later. Don't worry about that. I'm sending some guys over, if you know what I mean. Speaking of sending over some guys, I sent over some guys... last week to repopulate my wheel. The wheel, we had Halloweened it up, but now we're back. We're back in style. Let's fire this sucker up, comic book Brent. Here we go. All right. Brent, this week we added the MSX2, a much requested pie piece for the old machine here. And as a retro rewind, we've added the TI-99-4A. Cthulhu is pleased. Let's spin this sucker. Here we go. What do we got here? Oh, Lord. Well, this is another one of your specials. We have picked the Game Master / Systema 2000. Okay, comic book Brent, tell us about the Game Master / Systema 2000. What in God? Even I don't know what that is, and I am a god.
We will have to discover next week what that is, because I got no idea.
Once again, you're an idiot. I'm not pleased. You fool, dumb cough. Do you have anything you want to tell the folks in chat before we head out?
I don't.
You're an idiot. At least thank them. They're there. Who do we got in there today?
I want to say, well, a big thank you to Buck Owen.
Buck Owens.
Sorry, I choked on my own paint here.
Good.
I want to say thanks to Buck Owens for subscribing with Prime. And I want to say hello to Frodo and Picard and Mitsuyama. And who else we got in here?
Their evil pleases me.
Wing Chun Wolf, Aunt Jarvis, my lovely wife, who I was, believe is already off, but could actually still be here, Dave Velociraptor, all fine folks, Rob O'Hara, all joining us here today.
Beautiful, beautiful. And we had one successful non-crashing stream. That you're welcome. That was me. I sent some guys over to Suddenlink. They won't be, hopefully won't any more trouble. That's right. So, please, join us next week when we have a look at the Games Master 2000, whatever the hell that is. We'll figure it out. Until then, beware.
Oh, I've wasted my life.
Thanks for joining us today. We really hope you enjoyed the show. Quick shout out to all of our YouTube subscribers and Twitch followers. A special thank you to Duncan Styles for our vector graphics and BartBit for our amazing music. Would you like to keep ARG spinning for as little as a dollar a month? You can do so at anchor.fm/ARG-presents. Supporters get entry into the Amigos Discord channel, as well as their name called out in the credits. Supporters like these fine folks, Anthony Jarvis, Graham W. Vetke, Terry Howard, Gary Heather, John Schaller, The Slow Norris, Bernhard Lucas, Frodo NL, Steve Rasmussen, Chris Foles, Mitsuyama, Retroalgae, Permsky, John Deckman, and Jerry Dennington. Don't want to explain another credit card bill? That's okay too. You can help us out by leaving us a positive review on Spotify and Apple iTunes. Have an idea for a wheel piece? Send it to us at argpresents@mail.com. We record live every Sunday at 9 a.m. EDT on Twitch. Hope to see you there.